Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cheap Seats Chatter, our baseball podcast talking about all the great stories in the land of the diamond. I am your host, Alex Clark, joined today, as always, by the undeniable, indisputable best co-host in all of podcast land. We have Matthias Altman Kurosaki and Ryan Splash Potts. As we start every podcast, my fine main men, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
Well, there was no Mets baseball today, so that meant I spent today doing other things. You know, I actually, you know, did some work, went exercised, ate an earlier dinner. You know, I was actually done with my work relatively early in the day because the Mets weren't playing. But other than that, yeah, I had a fine day, I'd say. You know, just chilling, and I'm looking forward to this Mets-Dodgers series coming up where Timmy Trumpet is in town and is throwing out the first pitch tomorrow.
This just in, having the Mets not play leads to Mac actually getting his life back together and actually doing healthy things.
I normally exercise basically every day. It's just that today I did it a little earlier and had a bit of a longer workout.
I mean, nah, I'm just giving you crap. But, like, on top, I love the fact that Timmy Trumpet's coming to go play. Like, that is absolutely incredible. And now Edwin Diaz needs to get a save that day. That needs to be played live.
Okay, what would be more embarrassing there? If he throws out the first pitch and then Diaz doesn't get a save opportunity, like the Mets win 9-0 or the Mets lose 9-0, or that Diaz, like, they actually do the thing, and then Diaz comes in and, like, blows the lead.
Then I think the entire state of New York would be very much against all of Timmy Trumpet. They would probably just put it all right
back
on him.
Yeah, I think if that were to happen, I don't know if anyone would want to see Timmy Trumpet ever again.
I mean, I wouldn't want to see him either if he's playing William Contreras' walk-up music.
There's been this, you know, whenever William Contreras came up against the Mets at Truist Park, it just felt wrong that the Trumpets were playing in another stadium, but they're literally getting played in like every stadium around the world now, it seems like.
Yeah, my favorite part was when Mets fans were complaining that they played it after he hit a home run. Actually, this is the best part. So on the SNY broadcast for the game, they hear the trumpets like through the broadcast. The broadcasters like take the time to say, well, how is he an all-star, right? Like yada yada this, yada yada that. Like first, second pitch goes like 420 right center. And then you hear the trumpets again. And all the Mets fans flock to Twitter like, oh, William Contreras, the Braves are so bad. They played it after the home run. But I can find clips of June 30th, they played the Diamondbacks. He hit two home runs. They played it after both of his home runs. Or the other day when he hit a home run at home, they played it before and after the home run. So Mets fans on Twitter, very toxic. Braves fans too, but Mets fans are toxic too.
Unfortunately, the rivalry sometimes can bring out the worst in each fans. Trust me, I saw it during the Subway Series.
I mean, let's just be honest here. Like, as much as we love the game of baseball, every fan base has extremely toxic fans. Like, it's just something that's kind of undeniable, sadly. And we try our best to, you know, kind of avoid by educating the fans to be able to see, like, hey, you know, it's okay if someone tries to pick off one of your runners. You don't have to boo every 10 seconds at it. Like, that's the thing that annoys me about going to almost any ball game. We're just listening to one. Is if, like, say Julio gets a really big lead and then the runner, it's like the pitcher will try to pick him off at first, then he's hearing the loud boo! That just, man, it just loses me some faith in baseball humanity. But anyway, we're not talking about my loss of humanity today. Today we are talking about a number of other topics. The first of which, though, I did say his name just a moment ago, Julio Rodriguez, who has been one of the most electrifying players in all of baseball, and right now is the front runner, in my opinion, still to win the American League Rookie of the Year. Adley Rutschman very much is closing in on his heels, but right now, in my opinion, it is still Julio Rodriguez, and the Mariners see that, agree with it, and have said, we are not letting you leave. They have given him, and he has accepted a huge contract offer. Forget this right now. There are so many facets to this contract that it could be worth anywhere from 3, 13, 16, or 18 full years. No matter what, it's at least 8. And this is one of the most intricate contracts I've ever seen. I know there's a lot of other ones that are much more complicated, but this one really has so many different facets to it, where it has a bunch of club options, player options, and tons of incentives with it. Overall, the base of it is $210 million. So for a young rookie that is showing already that if this is where he's at now, where's his prime going to be? That seems like a steal. I have the Jeff Passan tweet here that was actually a really long thread of tweets that kind of explained it. And if it's okay with you guys, I'd like to kind of read it out here just to kind of give an idea of what this is. So with it, if it maxes out right now, the deal itself guarantees Julio $210 million at base. Just that is already guaranteed in the pocket, ready to go. But if it maxes out, it will be the largest baseball contract in existence at $470 million. And here's the details to it. The base of the deal is for 8 years and $120 million. So it includes this season and runs all the way through 2029. And after 2028, the Mariners must decide whether or not to pick up a club option. And the size and length of that depends on Julio's performance in the MVP voting. As well as, I believe there are other incentives in there, such as all-star game appearances, gold gloves, silver sluggers, all that fun stuff. The option is for either 8 or 10 years on top of the original deal, depending on how Rodriguez fares in MVP voting, wins, and finishes. And it can range anywhere from $200 million to $350 million. And if the Mariners pick up the option, Rodriguez's guarantee in the deal, it then becomes at the very least $320 million. Then, if the Mariners do not pick up the option after year 7, Rodriguez then has a player option after year 8 for 5 more years at $90 million. Thus, the 13-year structure and the $210 million floor that we've all been talking about. And he could turn it down, his own option, to have free agency, though, right before his 30th birthday, if he does so choose. More than likely, may not happen, depending on how much money he's going to be making after that point. And if Seattle takes, I don't see Seattle not taking their own club option if he is, continues on this path. And even Passan says the likeliest outcome is that Julio Rodriguez is a Mariner through 2037 and makes more than likely at least around $320 million and probably more if he turns into what people are expecting of him. So really, this has so many different outlets to it, where if this one, if he does like completely max it out, this would be the most lucrative deal in American sports history. Is that going to happen? I don't think so, but there's still more to this. Before I go on my next little rant on this, I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this. What did the Mariners jump the gun on this because he is so young? Do you think this was an incredibly smart deal by Seattle? Guys, what are you thinking when it comes to this contract?
I like this contract, personally. I like this for both sides, really. You know, they sort of took a page out of the Atlanta Braves playbook and locked up their young stars. You know, their young star he's only 21, sort of like what the Rays did with Wander Franco. Hopefully, this does not play out the way Fernando Tatis' contract plays out. Really, I don't think that will happen. But Julio Rodriguez, he's already shown, I mean, people are cautious, you know, but he's only 21, but he's playing just fine, really. He had that, you know, cold month of April, but 21 homers, 23 steals, playing strong defense and center. He's got 4.4 baseball reference war in 111 games. I think this is a guy who annually is a 6-7 win player. He probably will win an MVP. He'll be in multiple All-Star games. Who knows what he can do? The sky is the limit for this kid. And I can't believe that someone who is 8 months younger than I am is getting paid the way he is. I really, really like this contract. And I'm, you know, the Mariners, they've found their next, you know, their next Ichiro or their Ken Griffey Jr. You know, this is their guy here. And I think it's good on them for locking him up. I don't care that he's only played in 111 games. I think he's worth it. And I'm really excited to see how he plays over the life of this contract.
Okay, and first off, I do want to throw it out there. One, Michael Harris is 2 days older than I am, so that just makes everything weird, for me at least. Two, Julio Rodriguez's nickname on Baseball Reference. There's J-Rod, who no one calls him anymore, Acuna, after a certain someone, and Julio with a bunch of O's. So congratulations. Three nicknames before his first season's over. But yeah, I like what Seattle did here with, you know, locking up Julio. He's been in the Mariners system for a long time now. This isn't just like, oh, hey, welcome to the team. You're all of a sudden handed this large sum of money. And I think that's something that baseball fans sometimes miss, is that, like, yes, certain players played 100 games at the MLB level, or Harris has played 75 games, 80 games, what have you. Yes, that's true. But the organizations have been connected to these players for years upon years. This contract is not just, hey, he's going to be a Seattle Mariner for life. Well, guess what? He was a Seattle Mariner all the way back in, what, 2016, 2017? Like, this isn't, I don't think you can possibly jump the gun in baseball. This isn't like an NFL team getting a rookie. Like, if the Bengals turned around and gave Ja'Marr Chase the largest receiver contract in the league, that's not what this is. This is, you know, a Premier League team getting a guy in their youth academy, and then like 21st, 22nd birthday after they've played, you know, hundreds of games in the minor league system. Like, Julio Rodriguez has played 200 minor league games with the Mariners. He's played 361 games as a member of the Mariners, like, organization. That's more than two full seasons, right? So if you look at it from that perspective, I think it's absolutely not, I don't want to say a bargain, because it could be the most lucrative deal in the history of American sports, but I like how Seattle structured it. And I think it's good for both sides that if Julio balls out and is even better than Seattle might think he is, okay, he's going to make an absurd amount of money and he can opt out and say, hey, reconfigure this contract and we can work long-term again. Or if it doesn't work out, well, Seattle has outs and Julio isn't blaming, you know, anyone. He's blaming himself because for not performing up to the incentives in the contract. Like, I know the NFL would do this with like catches or yards or whatever. And always at the end of the season, there's, oh, hey, Mike Evans needs 7 yards to get to 1,000, or David Moore needs 2 or 3 catches. Those are funny things to me. And I think we could get into Julio playing late in September if the Mariners have clinched a playoff spot, just so he can like bump up the MVP numbers a little bit. But I think it's a great deal for both sides. And I'd be fascinated to see, like, if Atlanta tried like the incentive based stuff, say, hey, like, Harris, your deal is 8 years, $72 million. But if you win like 8 gold gloves, it can be 8 years, $200 million, something like that. I think that's always good for baseball. It's fun. And I like when it's more than just 4 years, $50 million. I like when it's, oh, 4 years, $50 million if X, but 4 years, $60 million if Y.
One thing I do need to correct you about a little bit there, Splash, is that definitely people still call him J-Rod. That is still 100% a nickname. He still has the necklace that says J-Rod Show, and it's still very much shown in basically every single ball game. Anyway, back to this a little bit. There's something that I like that you brought the incentives here, because that's a really interesting part of this deal, and not for maybe the reason a lot of people would think. The reason why a lot of people like go to incentives is that, you know, it's like, all right, yeah, motivation to keep going. Yeah. We want to make sure we're paying for what we're getting. And if you hit them, good, you get extra money. Most of the time, when incentives are put in a deal, it is at the behest of the general manager or at the behest of the team to do it, where the player more times than not is going to want the guaranteed money. Whereas the team is like, okay, well, if you do this, then we will give you more money. We'll write that in the contract. Most of the time, the team writes that. Jerry DePoto gave a press conference on the day of all of this, that everything was really fully announced. And he went out and said publicly that Julio was the one that asked for the incentives. Julio was the one that wanted it because, in the words of DePoto, as he said, Julio said he wanted that motivation. He wanted the motivation to keep going, saying that, all right, if I can do this, then I deserve that money. And I'm like, that's incredible for a kid this young, who, mind you, I don't know the exact age of Julio off the top of my head. I apologize. He is significantly younger than me. But to have the emotional maturity to say, all right, I want to do well with this team, but I need to know that I need motivation to keep playing. And I need the motivation to keep striving forward. If I get this, then you give me more money. It's something that's a really powerful thing for a young guy to say, instead of just taking the guaranteed cash. And I absolutely love it. We talked as well that this is a very team-friendly deal. It absolutely is, as is, you know, kind of common when it comes to younger players in this. You talked a lot about Splash that he's played about 2 full seasons in the minor leagues. That's not even remotely close, for the sole purpose of that's also not including his time in the developmental. Because that Seattle's been training the skins since he was 16. And that's when he was first originally taken. Which, by the way, sorry. Actually, I'm not Splash, sorry. He was actually almost signed by the Angels. And then Seattle swooped in with an offer at the last second and said, hey, we'll blow that offer out of the water. And they said, bet. But no, this is a very team-friendly deal, which is really cool, because that also means that for these next coming years, that gives Seattle more cap room to play with. Gives them more money to work with when it comes for signing free agents or making trades for players a little bit on a higher salary. And for Julio to be able to say, I'm okay with taking a little bit less money now if that means that we win, that's very Tom Brady-esque. And I don't want to put the two in the same category of that, because obviously one is an absolute living legend that has done already it all, and one is looking to do it all. But to be able to have the understanding that, you know what, the team needs money in order to pay players, I'm okay taking a little bit less if that means it. That's incredible. I am so impressed, not just with Julio Rodriguez as a baseball player, but as a mind and as a teammate now after this. It has been so much fun to kind of learn all the details of this contract, because it shows so much about what Julio is meant to do right now. He wants to have that motivation to keep being the absolute best player, not just on the Mariners, not just in the American League, but in all of baseball. That's his goal. That's his strive. That's why he wants the MVP numbers in here. That's why he wants everything he can to make sure that he is not just playing for money. He's playing to be the absolute best.
Yeah. And I like those incentives too. I mean, I always think though about when CC Sabathia got ejected in a game and he was one inning shy of hitting an incentive. So hopefully, you know, if Julio plays well enough, obviously, you know, the Mariners will let him hit all those incentives. And I really think he will hit them. And I definitely see an MVP in his future. Obviously, I don't think it will be this year, but it will definitely be probably, heck, it could be next year. It could be maybe a couple of years down the line. I definitely see it coming very soon. So I think, like, he's already turning into one of the best players in baseball, in my opinion. You watch him play. I mean, he can hit, he can run, he can field. And, you know, I think he's going to turn into that top 10 player in baseball that everyone thinks he will be. And I'm really happy he gets to stay in Seattle for a long time. Honestly, he's already one of the faces of the city of Seattle, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see what the future holds for him.
So this gives me a chance for one of my patented Splash stats. So of the 4 youngest players that are actively like on a major league roster, 3 of them are signed to long-term deals, being Wander Franco, Michael Harris, and now Julio Rodriguez. The one that does not fit that description has played 18 major league games, Vaughn Grissom. And I'm sure Alex Anthopoulos is working day and night to make sure Vaughn Grissom is on some 17-year, $42 million deal so the Braves could be stuck together for the rest of eternity. So I think that's very cool that You know, you have Harris. Harris was born in March of 2001. Franco was born in March of 2001. And Julio Rodriguez was born 3 days before 2001 began. And they all are, you know, set for the rest of the decade. Like, I think that, well, just about the rest of the decade. That's really cool to me that, you know, these young players, teams are saying, hey, we trust this to not blow up in our faces. And I almost think it's a changing of the guard from, like, how... Like when I grew up, like Pujols would get the 10-year deal, Hamilton would get the 10-year deal. These guys are like established veterans that have played 10 years and you're paying them for past performance. And a lot of times those don't bode well. There's a reason. Like you look at the top 10 salaries this year, Scherzer missed a chunk of time. Trout missed a chunk of time. Rendon, I don't even know what he's doing at this point. Cole. DeGrom missed a chunk of time. Bauer, let's not talk about it. Correa, hasn't been as good as you want him to be. Arenado, okay, MVP level. Strasburg hasn't played. And Lindor isn't, like, running away with the best shortstop in the world right now. So, like, a lot of these big salaries from veteran players, a lot of them don't work out. And a lot of these deals that, oh, well, you're getting this established star that's, like, former MVP or multi-time All-Star, well, those sometimes don't work. And now teams are betting on these young talent. Atlanta does a great job of it. You saw with Acuña, Albies in recent years, now with Harris. Even the Tampa Bay Rays, the epitome of cheap in Major League Baseball, said, this Wander Franco character, couldn't legally drink at the time, but hey, let's lock him up long-term because he is... how high would he be on like the list of best Rays ever? And he's played like 150 games tops, 128 games, and he's 5-WAR and probably top 50 in their history, which is more an indictment on the Rays than anything else. But I think that's good for baseball that these young stars are getting locked up in their home city, and you know, you're not getting Wander Franco poached away by the Yankees or you know, Michael Harris poached away by the White Sox or some goofy things like that.
Yeah, I want to throw something out there, which is that if I feel like those players who stay with one team their entire career, that's basically like a dying art. I mean, look, and I hate to bring this up for you, but I never thought Freddie Freeman was going to leave Atlanta. He left Atlanta. I mean, you got guys like Derek Jeter who never left the Yankees, and you know, David Wright never left the Mets, and Mike Trout, I guess, is currently stuck with the Angels. But now, you know, there's talks about, you know, Shohei Ohtani could leave the Angels, get traded. You know, Juan Soto got traded by the Nationals. I didn't think Juan Soto was ever going to be on another team, honestly. I mean, at least when after the Nationals won the World Series in 2019, I thought there was no shot he ever left Washington. And look, now he's not on the team anymore. I just think seeing that a guy like Julio and, you know, like Wander Franco, that they're committing long-term to staying with one team, I think it's really encouraging. It says a lot that maybe we're going to start seeing more of those players again who, you know, for Alex, and like Edgar Martinez, who stayed with the Mariners his whole career. Maybe we'll see more of those.
Okay. I do want to like fact check something. Wander Franco is already 30th all time in Tampa Bay Rays hitter war. Like 30th. I know they've only been a franchise since 1998. So like, the franchise as a whole, like, is barely older than Wander Franco, but you're telling me that they've only produced 29 better hitters than Wander Franco, and Wander Franco, again, can barely drink legally? Like, I mean, that's wild.
I mean, to be fair, that kind of makes sense knowing the, you know, the team.
I mean, yeah, but like, they've only had 4 players even over 30 baseball reference war. Like, Kevin Kiermaier is the 4th best player in Rays history by position player war.
Wow. So, okay, going back to Julio for a second, one thing I love the sentiment you brought up there about players staying with one team for their entire year, so for their entire tenure. Edgar was the first name that, of course, it came to me because I'm a, you know, Seattle Mariner diehard. The other kind of the like shock, like for your favorite, for me, it was Ichiro, where Ichiro leaving the team and going to the evil empire of all things was shocking.
That was like my worst nightmare. Yeah, Ichiro going to the Yankees. I remember getting. I was not home at the time, and I remember getting a message that Ichiro was going to the Yankees, and I thought it was literally like living a nightmare.
I mean, I remember exactly where I was at when I found the game. I was in Bothell, Washington, driving. It's like my my mom was driving me somewhere, I think off work, and I got the notification, and I don't remember if I either screamed or my jaw just dropped. One of those two. And I just remember like the moments afterwards, just feeling like I went through like the five stages of grief almost, where it's like I was like denial, anger, bargaining, acceptance, all that kind of stuff. And it just felt so weird. So now the really cool thing is, though, with Julio, we're not going to have to see that. Right now, it is looking exceedingly likely that Julio is going to stay his entire team, plant his entire, career with the Seattle Mariners. And to me, that just, that makes me exceedingly happy. I think that right now it's really cool to see that the first thing he said after all of this was, "I am so thankful to be a Seattle Mariner." I do not remember the last time I heard people say those words. And because a lot of times, like, there's the sign in Yankee Stadium, like in the dugout, I believe, that says, I think, I don't remember who it was, I think it was from Gehrig, that says, "I want to thank the good Lord for making me a Yankee." And to hear people use that sentiment with other teams is really encouraging to see. I'm so happy for Julio. I wish nothing for the best. I know what my next jersey is going to be. And, I love the kid. I really love this kid so much. The one thing I just worry about, I need to make sure we, I know that a lot of Mariner fans are really happy seeing Kyle Lewis after his big first year, which was again only a 20, it was the 2020 shortened season, and it didn't work out as well. I don't see the same mental makeup from Julio as Kyle Lewis has, but I really just want to make sure that, Seattle knows that they've got a treasure on their hands. Like, this is one of the youngest faces of the game. He's going to be right up there leading the charge towards the new era, right alongside guys like Michael Harris, right alongside all these other rookies like Franco. It's going to be amazing to watch. With all that being said, though, we're gonna head on now to our next topic, where we're not gonna talk about so much the new S players, definitely not the oldest players, but talking about players that are exceedingly good in their positioning, and that is a little bit of talk about the AL MVP. There are two names that are put side by side. We're gonna talk about both of them here, talk about the candidacy a little bit, but it's a really interesting debate between Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. Two very similar yet different players that very much are, let's just say, the epitome of different. They play the game so much differently. One more literal, one very much literal, one a little bit more subtle about it. So I want your guys' take here. Like, we're gonna go into a much more of a deep dive on this kind of idea, but who, if you have to just pick one name, right now, I don't want even any like discussion about it. I just want you to say the name here because I want to see where we're all standing right now between Ohtani, Judge, or other. Who is your pick right now for MVP? And then we're going to get into discussion about it.
Judge.
Interesting. I have Ohtani. And so we got some discussion going on here, but I want to see both of you guys here because they, again, the game is played so much differently between the two of them, very similarly, yet differently. Mac, I'll start with you on this one. I want to know, why do you think that Aaron Judge is the going to be the American League MVP?
Well, look, and I'm like one of the biggest Ohtani fans out there. Don't get me wrong. Like I've said in the past, I've been watching this kid play since he was 18, but you look at what Aaron Judge has done this year and, 293, 393, 655, already a great slash line. 49 homers. I mean, we're just finishing up the month of August, and he has 49 homers and 109 RBIs. He's also leading the league in walks. Yeah, he still strikes out a fair amount, but he already has more total bases than he did all of last year. He is at 302. He already got more wins above replacement this year at 7.4. He had six last year. He's playing solid defense. He's got a great throwing arm. He even has stolen 14 bases. You know, he leads the AL in extra base hits. He leads the majors in runs scored, home runs, RBIs, and slugging percentage and total bases, while leading the AL still in walks, OPS, and OPS plus. And he's leading in position player war too. That's the thing, is that while I guess Shohei can do both, Judge has more wins above replacement than he does, you know, pitching and hitting combined. It's 7.4 to 7.0. So really, and you also got to keep in mind, Judge is three homers away from tying his career high, and he still has 34 games to try to break Roger Maris's franchise record of 61 homers. And there's still a very real chance. Even when he was on a 9-game homeless streak, he came out, hit three homers this year. I watched him hit two of them against the Mets. I think Judge right now, especially if he breaks that home run record, he's got to be the MVP.
Yeah, I'm going to echo the same sentiment there. And I'm going to go to a bit of a more nuanced stat. It's called win probability added. You can also call it championship win probability added. Same idea. One is just an individual game basis. The other is helping your team win a World Series, put your team in a position to win the World Series. Aaron Judge leads the American League in both. 5.3 win probability added and 2.3 championship win probability added. So in the big moments, Aaron Judge has come through. In games against Houston that the Yankees couldn't score, but they could keep Houston within a couple runs, Aaron Judge was often there, you know, as the engine of the Yankees. And it's to me a similar argument to like Mets fans with Alonso, that it's like not a raw numbers thing. It's a valuable, right? We talk about value. Well, I think you bring value when you are flipping losses into wins, when you are putting wins away, when you're, you know, even demoralizing a team by launching a 500-foot home run in the first inning as the second or third batter in the game. So I think, you know, you can make all the mathematical arguments for Judge, the home runs, the ridiculous stats. He leads the AL and the majors and a lot of other stats. But I look at, hey, who is helping his team win the most, and who helped his team to, you know, for a long time, Yankees fans were saying, oh, this team's going to win it 114 games. Maybe not, but they're still going to win the division. They're still going to be the 2 seed in the American League. And Aaron Judge is a humongous reason why.
See, here's my logic here. And I don't disagree with anything that either of you guys have said. You guys have brought up stats, facts, logic. You guys are right. Aaron Judge has been on an absolutely phenomenal pace and has done absolutely incredible things with a baseball bat in his hands and even with a glove on his left on his hand. Here's my problem. It's not even so much that Judge does not deserve the award, because he 100% does. I'm going to bring up an odd argument here that I don't think anybody in their right mind should bring up, but I'm doing it anyway. The MVP award needs to be renamed. And not in Ohtani's name, not in Judge's name. Don't worry, I'm not going psycho with it. But my problem is that is the name of the award. The name of the award is the most valuable player. And you brought up a great part about that too, Splash, about that Judge has given a ton of value because of what he's able to do in the big moment, what he's able to do in all of these. In my humble opinion, when you're able to do two separate things, two different areas of the game, and fill two separate positions with one roster spot, that is adding an incredible amount of value to any team. Any team right now would be happy to have both players, obviously, but having that flexibility as a team to have a guy that is going to be not just your designated hitter, but also be your ace pitcher, and then do both of them at an exceedingly high level. His hitting numbers are not as good as they were last year, mind you, but the pitching numbers have gotten better. And that's the main thing here I'm looking at, is that right now, as much as Aaron Judge has done unspeakable things to baseball at this point in the year, and is, in my opinion, going to break Maris's record. I mean, why won't he? He's that dang good. My problem here is that the most value in my opinion, the most value comes from Ohtani. Ohtani being able to do both at that stupidly high level to still be a bat that you fear in that lineup, which, by the way, not hard to fear that many bats in the Angels lineup. Sorry, not sorry. But, and then also be, you know, every fifth day is Ohtani day, where he's on the bump and hitting. Like, Major League Baseball made a rule for Shohei Ohtani to make sure that he could keep hitting more by saying that if he's the pitcher, or if anybody is the pitcher and they come out of the game, they could still take the place of the designated hitter. Like, they could just become the DH. That just throws everything into flux with that. No, look, I really like Judge right now. As much as I've said in the past I don't like Judge, I actually, this year and last year especially, have really turned me into his favor. Watching what he does on the field is absolutely incredible. And what he's able to do with a bat, too. Like you said, I love the demoralizing idea that you brought there, Slash, as well. The idea that you could have him batting early in the lineup and then hit a 500-foot just rocket to start off a game to just completely demoralize an opponent. That can happen. And that will happen a lot, and that definitely does add value to you. My problem right now is that the most value comes from having a person on your roster that has two different positions that no one else in baseball is doing. And that's where my argument is. Is it wrong? Maybe. But that's where I think, and I honestly think with it, that the reward itself needs to be renamed something. Because, in my opinion at this point right now, there isn't going to be another, there is not even so much that there isn't going to be, but it's going to take a lot for another player that isn't a two-way to then win this award if Ohtani continues on this pace, at least at the strong level that he has.
Okay, so I totally agree where you're coming from here with the idea that, like, being able to be a middle of the order, or I guess for the Angels case, top of the order bat and a top of the rotation arm, like, that's going to exceed the value that any person that does one or the other. I agree with the sentiment. However, I do think that there should be something of a, I have written an article about this. It's called the Ohtani curve. So essentially a combination of his batting war and his pitching war and how that maps across MVP voting. Because yeah, it speaks for itself that a player that does both is more valuable than a player that only does one. However, you can be so good at one that it counteracts being good at multiple things. I'm going to use a NFL example here. If you ask someone who the best running back in the NFL is, they might say Jonathan Taylor. They might say Nick Chubb. I would say Nick Chubb. They might say Derrick Henry. But the days of Christian McCaffrey being the best running back in the NFL are kind of, I don't want to say over, but he's a less popular pick to be that number one running back. But he was a number one running back because he, you know, was a good enough runner, but he was a great receiver. So he did both at a high level. But people are saying, hey, well, Nick Chubb is a so much better runner, and it's more valuable for a receiver to catch a ball rather than McCaffrey. So his, like, receiving value diminishes a little bit. So that's, I think you can almost circle yourself into that and say, hey, Ohtani is only DHing. There are much more valuable hitters than Ohtani as a DH. Now, if he was playing right field, I think you'd have a more nuanced argument. But I do think that being very, very good at two things, sometimes, like last year, it happened that, you know, Vlad Guerrero did not have the statistical acumen to dethrone Ohtani. And I think there was a solid argument. Let's say if Ohtani played right field instead of DH and didn't pitch, if Ohtani was just a strict right fielder, I think there was a solid argument you would take him over Guerrero potentially, right? With the acumen of the hitting season he had, but the pitching season just moved him over the top. I think this year there is such a gap between Judge and Ohtani that, and there's lots of other players. If it was strictly a Ohtani as a hitter season, I would barely have voted him as an all-star, as opposed, let alone an MVP candidate. Yordan Alvarez is having a ridiculous season. You have Devers, you have Ramirez, you have Judge, of course, you have, you know, half a dozen, if not more, guys that if you take Otani's pitching out, I don't think Otani is second in AL MVP odds or potentially first in winning the darn thing. So I think that plays a role into it, that yes, it's valuable to do two things, but if you are so excellent at one thing, it can trump the other two.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, it's interesting because when we had this conversation at the All-Star break, I believe we all had Yordan Alvarez either first or second in the running. But Yordan, unfortunately, ever since that hand injury, has only hit four extra base hits in his last 100 plate appearances, including only one home run. So that's why I was just writing about the AL MVP race, and he's fallen to third, in my opinion. Otani, I mean, I think, by the way, while we were talking, he did hit a two-run homer, so he's up to 29 on the year. The other thing, though, is that he's probably a top-five Cy Young finisher. But like you said, his bat, while it's great, you got to remember also he got off to a bit of a sluggish start, did not have a good April. Honestly, it took him until probably about first, second week in May to get going. It's so hard to separate, you know, or to sort of, I guess, A, separate the pitching and the hitting, but also it's hard to look past a guy who might have a record-setting season. And that's the thing is last year, obviously, Otani hit 46 homers, had close to 1,000 OPS. He was great at hitting on its own. You know, maybe last year he wouldn't have been top five Cy Young voting. This year, obviously, he is the highest strikeouts per nine of any qualified starter. I just think while he's become a more complete pitcher, his offense is great, I don't think it's as good as it was last year. And because of that, when you look at what Judge is doing, it's just hard for me to look past it. So especially if he gets to 60, it's the same way, you know, Giancarlo Stanton won because he hit 59 homers in 2017. I think especially if Judge gets to 60 or 61, I think he has to be AL MVP.
And I understand your guys' arguments when it comes to this. Like, I want to make sure I'm being clear here. Judge is stupid good. Judge is a stupidly good baseball player. And one that, you know, the reason why I said earlier about the players that do it so similarly yet so differently is because both of them are very big hitters, very big power hitters. Where the real line comes here is what, in my opinion, what do you value more? What do you value great defense or great pitching? And yes, I'm not going to say that their offenses are equal. Obviously, Judge's is much, much, much better. But I look at this right now and I can't deny the fact that in one position spot, you have a starting pitcher that is going to finish in one of the top spots of the Cy Young, and a hitter that may not be at the highest level, but is still a hitter that you would put basically in nearly any lineup. There are very few lineups that would say that they're okay without Otani. They've said, "Nah, we're good." I mean, I think at that point you're kind of dumb, in my opinion, if you really don't want to have Otani like hitting for you. I think right now it's just going to come down to, I think, a different ideology at this point, because my view on it is that if you are bringing the most value in being able to do both things exceedingly well, whereas one is generationally well. It's what do you value more? Do you value the guy that is the jack of all trades, master of none, or the person that is the master of one, jack of none? Like, it becomes kind of a bit of a problem there at that point. And I'll go on record saying this as well. Judge is the best player in baseball. 100%. I'm going to say that. He is the best player in baseball.
This year, yes.
This year, yeah. This year, he is the best player in baseball. He's not the most valuable. The difference comes in what they are able to do and how much value do you bring to your team. And that's why I start all of this by saying that the award needed to be renamed. Name it something different. Name it something that has to do with the being the best at what you're doing, not the most valuable. Because at that point, then it's a whole different argument. It's like, in my opinion, it's kind of like the Monty Hall problem, where at that point where you can choose one door, one of the wrong doors gets changed. It's a completely different question at that point from the original 1 and 3 versus 2 and 3. If you guys know what the Monty Hall problem is. So that's kind of my argument with this. Any other last thoughts before we move on?
I mean, bear in mind also, go ahead, Splash.
Okay. I do think you can run into like a almost... Okay, Alex, how good relative to the rest of the league do you think Ohtani needs to be at both things to be like the shoe-in most valuable player every year? Does he just have to be a league average pitcher and a league average hitter? No. Or does it...
I think he needs to be very good in both. And here, my talk with it is at that point, like, you need to be adding that kind of value to your team. And as long as you are a very strong hitter, one that, you know, is going to be in at least consideration for, like other hitting awards, or one that, you know, when you come up to face them, you are worried about what Ohtani is going to do, then as a pitcher, where you're like, oh, it's Ohtani we're facing today, all right, we need to be ready. That kind of idea, and I know that's very unstatistical way of talking about things, but the idea of basically, like, you don't need to be the greatest in either, but being still very strong in both. Like, you can't just be league average in both, otherwise you're just going to turn into, you know, average. You'll still definitely be more valuable than the average player, but to be the most valuable, you still got to be very good in both.
Okay, yeah, that's where I run into some issues with just saying, oh, Ohtani is going to win MVP every year, because you could make the argument he deserves to, because he's, you know, 2 roster spots in 1. But if he's just, say, replacement level at one or the other, then I don't think you're bringing value there. Like, this year, he does bring value to both sides. It's just, I don't think the cumulative value, I don't think is quite as good as what Aaron Judge brings. But last year, it surpassed what Guerrero did. And most years, I think, like, last year was, like, outlandishly good with, you know, an even higher OPS plus than he was. Although this year he has picked up the quote-unquote slack from the pitching side of things, and he's going to, in all likelihood, qualify for the ERA title and have an ERA under 3, which is insane. And like you said, he has the highest K per 9 among qualified starters.
And that's kind of where I'm at with this. Sorry, you go over it, Mac.
Yeah, well... You know, it's crazy because we're talking about these two guys when Judge is in his contract year. So for all we know, he can walk in free agency. Again, like I was saying earlier, I can barely imagine Aaron Judge being on another team. But at the same time, there have been talks that the Angels could trade Ohtani. So it's like neither of these guys could be on their teams on the same team next year. So I just thought that was worth pointing out. I mean, it's really going to be interesting to see what these guys, like, what their value turns into. I mean, what type of contract will Judge get this offseason? What ridiculous haul would the Angels get if they were to trade Ohtani? I mean, it's really crazy to think about.
It really is. And that's why it's going to be really funny to see where both these guys end up starting 2023 at, which that could be a whole nother discussion of its own, but that's good. I think a discussion for another time. At the end of the day right now, I think it comes down to just different ideologies. And Splash, I definitely respect your points, because you make fantastic points. You as well, Mac. Both of you, like, you make a really good argument for Judge. I'm not saying that Ohtani is just going to, like, just slate him in to be the MVP every year, because he does still definitely have to earn it. But it's much easier to earn it when you are doing two facets of the game exceedingly well. So, with that being said, let's move on to another topic here. We've been talking about a lot about the rookies, a lot with Julio Rodriguez. And there's one rookie that has really come into fruition here as of late. He's been one of the most good feel stories of the year, and that is one Adley Rutschman. Rutschman, the young catcher for the Baltimore Orioles has been turning heads, and I'm not going to say redefining the catcher position, but he is quickly becoming one of the best right now in all of baseball at his position. And again, remind you, this guy hasn't played a full season yet. He's just been really, really, really good, though. He's been exactly what Baltimore Orioles fans have been wanting and more, as well as baseball fans have been wanting and more. So, guys, I just want to talk, I want to ask you guys, where do you guys think Adley is right now when it comes to, like, say, in Rookie of the Year voting? Or just overall, like, where do you see his ceiling? Do you think that he is the number one catcher in baseball right now? Or do you think we still need to see more from him in order to be able to make that kind of distinction?
Okay, so Julio Rodriguez will win and should win the Rookie of the Year because he's played the entire season. But on a per-game basis, I would take Adley, with all due respect, Alex. I would say Adley is the best catcher in baseball. I don't think there's a catcher in the league that influences the game both from both sides of the plate, quite literally, because he's a switch hitter. But as a batter, he has tremendous plate discipline. They're like, I went to the Ravens game the other day and the guys behind me were like, yo, Adley had another double. It feels like every night or every other night he has a double. He is always coming through with extra base hits. He's coming through in big moments, and he is a catalyst for an Orioles team that, as of a couple days ago, had the best record in the American League East since the middle of May. Keep in mind, the going back to the middle of May still includes when the Yankees were on pace to win 115 games plus. Like, we are talking about an absurdly good, you know, Orioles team since Adley got called up. And it's exceptional how he plays. And defensively, he is the only reason I don't want robo-umps to be a thing. Because, like, pitch framing, he is, like, comes into Major League Baseball as one of the best, if not the single best pitch framer in the league. And he's only behind other guys because he hasn't caught as many innings, but it's just the pure insanity that he could roll out of his, you know, womb essentially as one of the best, if not the single best catcher in baseball. And to hammer this point home, despite playing 30 fewer games than a lot of top catchers, Adley Rutschman is second in terms of Baseball Reference WAR. Now, Baseball Reference does include framing, so I don't know how high he gets jacked up on Fangraphs, but JT Realmuto, 4.6 WAR in 109 games. Adley Rutschman, 3.8 WAR in 79 games. Alejandro Kirk, Wilson Contreras, 3.5 each. They've played an average of 109 games. Sean Murphy, 117. Will Smith, 107. Jose Trevino, 92. Kyle Raleigh, 95. Jonah Heim, 102. William Contreras is the only person in the same stratosphere in terms of games played, at-bats, what have you, and he's a 1.5 WAR behind. So Adley is having a all-time season as a catcher. If he was going to play the full season, he would be on pace for about 8 WAR. Like, 8 WAR seasons for catchers don't happen. Like, it does. Buster Posey, 2012, is an outlier. Joe Mauer, 2009, it's an outlier. People don't just accumulate WAR like that. And I'll let you guys talk while I look up the other catchers to do it.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, I got to watch him play. I went to an Orioles game a couple weeks ago and he's got great play discipline. I mean, he's walked in 13.7% of his plate appearances and he's only struck out in 17.1%. So, I mean, you know, he's got a great approach to the plate, very advanced, you know, 363 on base percentage, I think really shows it. And his OPS is above 800. He's got a 134 WRC plus, which is great. He's actually even a positive base runner, which is interesting. I'd say I'd say obviously JT Realmuto has had a great second half. I'd say he's kind of like a Realmuto type, or I'd say maybe he's like Yasmani Grandal, but he can run and he's a better defender and not hitting 120 this year. You know, I think Adley really if he maybe had played the full season, I know that he'd had a shoulder injury at the beginning of the year, he probably would be it. Like, the Rookie of the Year race would probably be a little closer. I really think that, you know, nowadays, you know, the catcher position, a lot of people look at it as, you know, it's not like a big offensive position. I think Adley really, he has a chance to show that he, you know, that there are catchers that exist who can hit and field well. I think You know, he already has 26 doubles in only 79 games. That's insane. That's on pace for over 50 in a full season. I mean, like you said, 8 WAR. I mean, you rarely get that for catchers. I remember watching Buster Posey do it. I remember watching Joe Mauer do it in 2009. It's interesting because if you go by Fangraphs WAR, Buster Posey had over 10 WAR in his MVP season. You know, I think Adley really, he's just, it's really, really tough to say, but honestly, he might be the best catcher in baseball already. You know, I know maybe I'm jumping to conclusions here, but what he's done in only 79 games, it's hard to think of catchers that are better than him right now. And sure, maybe Realmuto has a little bit on him right now, but really, I think we're about to be living in Adley Rutschman's world, and I don't know who's stopping him, really.
Oh, I know exactly who's stopping him, and that man is one, yeah, Mr. Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, as soon as I said that, I knew that I mean, yeah, you walked right
into that one, Matt. Yeah. Come on. But no, okay, realistically, there are some good, really good catchers right now in baseball. That's what's kind of interesting about this conversation, is that Adley already is already in that kind of echelon. Watching him play, he is absolutely fantastic. And also, real quick, Splash, just because I want to make sure I make this note here, pitch framing is one of the reasons why I'm very much okay for the Robo-Umps, because I do not care for pitch framing. It is just lying. Anyway, regardless, it is lying in
me. Well, you got to be a good liar sometimes, you know?
You know, hey, that's a really good thing to admit on camera there, Mac. So, I think that when you look, there's some other catchers that I would kind of put above him, like, again, Realmuto. I would put above him. I would say that Will Smith is at least in that conversation as well. I think him just as a hitter is really nuts. Like, I like what I see from Rush. I think that we are definitely, he's going to be the best within a very, very short amount of time. Like, I would be surprised if we're not saying that he's the best catcher by the end of 2024. Like, I'd be very surprised if we got to December 31st of 2024 and we were not saying that Adley Rutschman is the best catcher in baseball. So I think that he's definitely on that right trajectory. Julio Rodriguez is the MVP, the rookie of the year. Julio should be the MVP. Yeah, no Trout, no Otani, no Judge. It's not only Julio. It is Julio's world, and I am very much living in it. But no, when it comes to Rutschman, I think looking at what he's done overall, is he the best right now? No, just because I think that there are some other better ones right now in baseball. But he's really, really, really close. And the fact that he's doing this with, what, half a season under his belt? Like, come on, guys. That's awesome. I love watching him, too, because I'll always remember the first thing I always think of when I think of Rutschman is that when he came out for his first game in Baltimore, he came out to go catch the warm-up pitches, and as he was going out there, he took his mask off and just looked around because everyone was giving him a standing ovation because they were so happy to hear him, and he just kind of basked in it for a second, and he had this huge smile on his face, and it made us all remember that, you know, he's a kid. These are all kids we're talking about here. Like, I'm older than basically every one of the main players that we're talking about here, except for Judge. I am not as old as Judge. He is 30. I am 28. And I believe Otani is also older than me. I'm not 100% on that one, though. But no, like, it was really cool to see it, and I just love the way how he approaches the game. He approaches it like a professional, but has fun with it like a kid. And I love that about him.
Okay, it's time for the stats. Adley Rutschman has...
Sorry, that's how you said that. I go this emotional story about him having fun with the game and all that, and then Splash like, all right, back to numbers.
Okay, WAR, what is it good for? Well, a lot of things. So Adley Rutschman has 3.8 baseball reference WAR through his first 79 games. That is on pace over 162 games to be about 7.7. I'll say 7.6 to be nice to him. Say he plays first base a couple days to get in those extra reps. Anyways, here is a comprehensive list of every catcher in the history of the league. 50% of their games at catcher, at least, have 7.6 WAR in a season. Piazza, Carter, Bench, Mauer, Bench again, Daryl Porter, Posey. That's it. And even if you drop it to 7, Gary Carter, Johnny Bench again, Fisk, Munson, Yachty once, Carter again, Piazza again, Fisk. He doesn't even have to keep up the 3.8 over, you know, X number of games. You drop it to 3.5, and it's a top 20 catcher season in the history of the sport. Like, that is how scary he can be. And he's a rookie. This is his first, like, taste of Major League Baseball. He had an injury to, like, slow his start this year, and he actually got off to a bit of a sluggish start. But, like, I think you can say I would be surprised if next year or 2024 he doesn't have a 7 WAR season. And again, there have been 15 catcher seasons ever to reach that. So you're talking about a once a decade caliber season, and I think Adley is the best chance to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's hitting a lot of doubles right now. I think those doubles will eventually start turning into homers. And watch out for when that happens. So, yeah. You know, this guy is special. You know, he's, I guess, in the minors he had as many as 18, but he was a big power guy at Oregon State. He got the Barry Bonds treatment when he was at Oregon State. I mean, he's special, really. And, you know, he's only 24. He's got a long, long way to go. And, you know, this is a generational talent we're watching. And, you know, it's really awesome to see all these amazing young players come up and perform as advertised. So, yeah, I remember he got off to a bit of a slow start, but much like Julio, he's locked in after those, you know, first couple of weeks or so of struggling. So I'm really excited to watch both these guys dominate their respective positions for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I agree when it comes to Adley. I think that's, which by the way, I need to give a little bit of shout here to Oregon State, giving some love to the Pac-12 right now. Go Cougs, by the way. Brendan Mazzardo doing work in the minor leagues. Anyway, I think right now when it comes to Rutschman, I don't think it's going to be too long before we're starting to potentially say MVP when it comes to where the trajectory that he's at right now. Like we talked about that. You brought up that his doubles could soon be turning into home runs. The way that his power stroke is really starting to come up right now, if that starts to happen and we're starting to get 7+ WAR seasons from him, catcher, in my humble opinion, is one of the most important positions on the baseball diamond. And I don't think there's a whole lot of debate in my mind of that. It's one of the most physically demanding. You have to be one of the smartest people in the entire stadium in order to play that position, as well as be one of the toughest. And Adley does all those in spades. I don't think anyone could say that. So at that point right now, I think this is a kid that is knock on wood for everything. Barring any level of setback, he's going to become a superstar. He's already very well on that trajectory. And the only reason why he won't win Rookie of the Year is because Julio Rodriguez started the year on the Major League roster. So, with all that being said, is there anything else we have left on here on Adley before we wrap up our show today?
Yes, I have one small little point. So, Adley Rutschman, his age 24 season, 79 games played, right? 3.8 WAR. Joe Mauer's in 2007, his age 24 season, 3.9 WAR and 30 extra games. Special.
Yeah, it really, really makes you think. I mean, it also sure does help that he's a switch hitter, you know. So I think, man, it's going to be wild really watching him play out because, you know, especially like, you know, obviously with Posey having retired. You know, Posey was arguably the best catcher in baseball during his career. I'll go out there and say it. I think he was better than Molina because he could hit significantly better and he could field pretty well. And, you know, now someone has to inherit the throne. I think right now we're watching Adley Rutschman do that. I mean, we're going to watch him probably hit 20 to 30 homers multiple times. We're going to watch him have multiple 7-8 win seasons. And I actually do think he wins an MVP. And we haven't had a catcher win MVP, I believe, since Posey in 2012. And I think Adley Rutschman will be the next one to do it.
Yeah, I think Rushen will be the next catcher to win an MVP. Do I think it's going to be really soon? No, probably still going to be a good couple of years out. But I do think that he's going to be the best catcher for way too long as well. And that's Salah Joe Mauer, very impressive. So with that being said, now we are at the end of our show. Guys, do we have any other final thoughts we want to close out the show with?
Okay, I do want to put some respect on the Tampa Bay Rays. I looked it up. Since 1998, they are one of five teams with four players with 30 or more baseball reference WAR, four hitters. So Carl Crawford, Kiermaier, Evan Longoria, and Ben Zobrist. So the other group, other teams there, Astros, Rockies, four each, Yankees, six, Red Sox, seven. Can you name the one team that does not have a 30 WAR hitter since 1998?
The Pirates.
McCutcheon.
Ah, right. Padres?
Padres is correct. Wow. Good what? Job there. Yeah, Padres Woo! Is correct. There you go. Wow. This is a great list. Yeah, McCutcheon, Eric Chavez, Joe Mauer, Ryan Braun, Stanton, Justin Turner on the Dodgers. He's the only Dodger. Trout, Cabrera, Miggy, J-Ram, Votto, Abreu, Bautista and Delgado in Toronto, Beltran, Kinsler, Seager and Ichiro, Beltran and Wright, Gordon and Perez, Rizzo and Sammy, Adam Jones and Machado, Goldie and Luis Gonzalez, Vladdy Sr. with the Expos, Rendon, Zimmerman, Edmonds, Yachty, Pujols, Bonds, Brandon Crawford, Posey, Abreu, Rollins, Utley, Freeman, Andrew, and Chipper, Crawford, Kiermaier, Longoria, Zobrist, Altuve, Bagwell, Berkman, Correa, Arenado, Helton, Tulo, Walker, wish Tulo had played longer, Cano, Gardner, Jeter, Judge, Posada, A-Rod, and the Red Sox, Betts, Xander, Garcia, Parra, Ortiz, Pedroia, Ramirez, Yukalis. What a name. What a list.
That was a very long that's list. Actually, very long-winded yeah, list. Way to go.
that's an impressive list. That's a very impressive list. So I guess list. That's the thing is, yeah, the Rays obviously they came into existence in 1998. So I mean,
how surprised both of you were that I got that right off the rip.
I mean, I wasn't.
It took me like 10 minutes. I was looking at the list and it took me 10 minutes to figure out the missing team.
Yeah.
Well, like I have all of them highlighted. It's like, it's Padres.
Yeah. By the way, since we were talking about rookies, I did want to mention that the D-backs called up Corbin Carroll to play in today's game. Yeah. And he did get his first big league hit. And the D-backs have overcome a 7-0 deficit somehow already against the Phillies tonight. They scored six, I believe, and then four in the next inning. It's like the fourth inning, by the way. It's 10-7. But the one last thing I want to say is a weird stat, which is that the Angels are 55-73, and they have 16 shutouts this year. That means almost a third of their wins this year have been shutouts. So there's one thing Angels fans want to hold for this year, that they have a weird statistic like that. Other than that, I'm looking forward to just the next week of baseball, and this is the stretch drive. So it's scoreboard watching season, I would say.
Very much so. All right, my last little note to be here is going to be a little bit of propaganda here for my Mariners. I want to bring attention to the legend that is Sam Haggerty. Sam Haggerty is a legend of a human being that is an amazing utility player, hitter, runner, and has, let's just say, has cojones the size of Texas. This man is going to be a problem in the postseason. I'm just going to tell you that right now. If Seattle makes the postseason, Haggerty is going to be the name that nobody knows, but everyone will know by the end of it. It's like Randy Arozarena was. Haggerty is going to be that guy for Seattle, calling it right now. But that's going to do it for our show tonight. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in today. Thank you so much to Matt. You can go follow Matthias at Matthias underscore A underscore K. You can go follow Splash at Mr. Splash Man 19. You can go follow me on Twitter at TheSportsGuy242. But for everyone here at Cheap Seats Chatter, my name is Alex. I have been your host for today's episode. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe and hope to see you all real soon. Thank you.